Hi, good evening. I'm your host, Erica, on Catch the Clash of Flavor Radio. Tonight we have Genevieve Ramage, the Development and Communications Coordinator at the TD Center of Learning.
Hello.
Hi. So we last spoke with her on November the 14th, and we're glad to have her back. So welcome, Genevieve.
Thank you.
How's it going?
It's great. I had a massage before I came here, so I'm feeling it. I'm good.
I envy you.
Sorry, I shouldn't have said anything.
I envy you. But in any case, so I just have the two follow-up questions to ask. So how do you think social services in Regent Park community differ from other communities? And if so, why do you think there's a difference?
Whoa. Okay. All right. We're getting deep into it right away.
Right out the gate.
It's good. I'm into it. Social services are different in Regent Park because there is really that grassroots connection that I don't see a lot in other communities. Again, Regent Park is the first community that I have worked in charity with, but everyone knows everybody here. You know, I walk down the street and I see people that I know, and everyone's been working with each other for many years. And I think that that really sets Regent apart from other communities because there is that level of comfort and family that is here.
Okay. So. Okay. And so what are the things that you have learned through experience in your position at the TD Center of Learning? And is there anything, so anything you've learned through experience that you wish you knew before you got into it?
Ooh. In terms of working for a charity and working for the Center for Community Learning and Development?
Yeah, I guess that. But just in general terms as well, anything, any sort of life experience that you know, that you have now that you wish maybe you had before you entered the profession?
Yeah. I wish I volunteered more. We do have a lot of interns and volunteers from high school that are getting a taste of something that I only got to know about 2 years ago, and I was like 27 when I first started to get to know this. Like some are 17, 18, 19, getting to learn what's at the heart of charity and what's at the heart of being a part of nonprofit. And I think that's really important. So that's something I wish I had done when I was younger.
Okay. So last time you were here, you did mention IWIP, which is the Immigrant Women Integration Program, and it offers immigrant women a leadership development opportunity to prepare for work for or volunteering in the social service and community-based sector. So just for a little context, the participants develop organizational and analytical skills, gain understanding of organizational structures, and participate directly in local community organizations. So it's a one-year intensive program. It includes 25 hours per week in class and a three-month internship. And with us today, we have a graduate from the IWIP program, Nada Maria. How do you pronounce your name again?
Arteaga.
Perfect. Welcome, Maria. How are you?
Thank you.
Good. So just like to introduce you today. Maria is a very extroverted, active mother from Colombia. Did I say that correctly?
You're right.
Awesome.
Yeah. Colombia, yes.
And she joined the IWIP program after 5 months of arriving to Canada and graduated in 2016. Congratulations.
Well, it was after 3 months.
Even shorter.
Okay. Wow. So this makes it even more impressive.
So congratulations. So through IWIP, she developed multiple workshops on music therapy, conducted a community needs assessment in Scarborough, and is heavily involved in community arts and education. It says here that you are also the recipient of the Elizabeth Cook Award, and you're currently hired by the TDSB, and you hold Spanish classes at the TD Center of Learning. Okay, and just to give you a little context on that Spanish program, we do have a little clip here. So again, welcome, Maria.
You're very kind. Yeah, thank you. So
when I moved to Canada 7 months ago, I wondered what I could do in my new community. I searched everywhere trying to find a useful program to enroll in. One day, while I was registering my child at school, I was referred to a settlement worker. She helped newcomer parents. As we were talking, I saw a flyer about a newcomer women's program in her office. I was curious about the program, so I went to its website. It seemed like an interesting program because it emphasized leadership and was designed to impact three levels: individual, community, and service agencies. I sent my resume to the center TCCLD, and I was accepted.
As a new person to Canada, I'm looking at my new beginning in life as a way to make it more meaningful. But I first arrived here. I always walk in the street alone. I didn't have a goal and I was reset. How can I take a step? I thought. One day, I come close to Dennis center of the name. That's where I found the most of the file on the table. My side fox in brooch for the IVAP. Back at the home, I searched IVAP online and got more information. Yes, it seemed very interesting and very shopping for me. I decided to set up.
I arrived in Canada 1.5 years ago. Then I was looking for my first job, but all proposals I found were not connected with my education, experience, and skills. One day, a settlement worker who I was working with as a volunteer told me about IWIP program. She suggested me to send my resume to the program manager, so I sent it.
Okay, so again, welcome, Maria. So I will ask you a few questions just on your experience with IWIP and whatnot. And Genevieve, you can hop in at any time here.
I love hopping in.
Awesome. We all do. So yes, we just want to ask, so how did you get involved with IWIP and how did you hear about it? I know they touched on it on the clip, but just want to hear about your experience, how you got involved with IWIP.
It was through another organization that is called SAS, and it was my counselor, the one who told me, Maria, why don't you apply for that program? And I was really interested because of the leadership and community services.
Okay.
Are always connected. They have been always connected to me.
Okay, that's great. That's great. So, and how long have you been involved with IWIP, and what does that program entail for you? So how long had you been involved with IWIP?
I think that since the first time I just started with the program, 2015, I've been doing different activities. I conducted surveys, I've been teaching, and I've been surrounded of people and trying to help community.
Okay. And since you were a participant in IWIP, how did that benefit you as a person who is in IWIP? How did that benefit you?
Wow. I have received from IWIP knowledge, training, confidence. I have learned about this country. I have felt... so happy of being engaging all the time with community, and nowadays I'm also teaching. I became part of the instructors at the TD Learning Center. So I'm very proud of that. Okay. Of course, my teachers, all the staff, coordinators, they have been always helping me, supporting me in all projects I have worked for them and with them.
That's really good to hear. I'm happy to hear that, Maria. And so what are the things you are most proud of learning from the program? Like from learning from the IWIP program, what are you most proud of?
I'm proud of being able of being working around community. Of being teaching, it's not Spanish at all. It's the philosophy of helping people, being very kind, teaching values through classes, getting engaged with all kind of people, no certain kind of people. Everybody is more than welcome. And also part of my life has been connected to music mm-hmm. and art. So it's a mixture of things at the same time. It's you can reload your energy because sometimes we have to face difficulties, isolation.
Of course.
Or you can feel sad for some reason, or you can feel you can miss someone, mm-hmm. something from your back, mm-hmm. from your country. Or even in staying here, people from Canada and from different countries, everybody is more than welcome. And once you're over there, we have our own space to help each other, to start creating a new style of class mm-hmm. that is with... You start with a kind of energy and you finish so happy, and you can work on networking as well. Mm-hmm. You can establish connections, not only for you to start speaking Spanish, but of course you will be motivated mm-hmm. to visit one of our countries, to learn from our culture, mm-hmm. Hispanic culture. But also people realize the amazing things the organization is doing mm-hmm. through attending this program. They say, oh, now we have the TD with these new ideas. It's not only academic, but to let us all feel much better as a community, mm-hmm. to build communities all together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, when you mention community, it makes me smile because I guess what it comes down to is the TD Center of Learning, your classes, your experience, that comes down to unity and uniting people together from our walks of life. So so that aspect really interests me. And, you know, I really love that.
It's to follow everything I learned from them. Well, actually, I've been a teacher all my life. Mm. So, but with everything I received from IWIP, I learned the way I had to conduct a workshop.
Oh,
in
okay.
the Canadian style. Mm. So I feel so happy following the agenda and working on the outreach and creating and designing my posters, my flyers, mm-hmm. my new style here. People have really felt happy and thankful, mm-hmm. and they're asking for more workshops.
Okay.
So it's not only a class, it's an environment.
It's an environment. Okay.
Ooh, that's a good
line. That's
deep. Maria.
That's really deep.
Yes. Yeah.
You actually touched on my next question, which was, so can you tell us a bit about you don't just teach Spanish, you teach other classes as well, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, so can you tell us a bit about that? And how would someone get involved with teaching? And how does it feel for you to be a teacher when you were a student before?
Oh,
ooh, oh. Erica, okay.
If you're a teacher, you have to be, like, your mind has to be open to be studying, attending different trainings, attending different classes. You have to think and rethink about the way you're teaching. Mm. Yeah, it's metacognition all the time. Why? Because all of us need to have a really meaningful learning. Meaningful learning means that it's not only for a moment, it has to be long memory term, but especially with your feelings.
Oh, okay.
What is that for you
real? You have to learn emotionally.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. And so what are some tips you would give to newcomers or immigrants, people who have just come to Canada? What is any advice you would give them?
Wow, I can teach a lot about it. You have to join people like us. They have to come to an organization like this. Mm-hmm. They don't have to feel isolated. They don't have to feel lost in this new country. Mm-hmm. You have to take advantage of everything these kind of organizations are supporting all of us mm-hmm. in different ways. Not only supporting through knowledge at all, mm-hmm. but it's a guidance. You have to learn the way you can move. You can identify different kinds of societies mm-hmm. that you have here, mm-hmm. people from all over the world. It's not like a geographical map, mm-hmm. but also a cultural map, ah. right? Socio-cultural map that is different from the Great Toronto mm-hmm. that we have in our maps.
Yes, yeah? Yes.
So according to your feelings, your interests, or your background, you can take advantage of everything you bring from your country mm-hmm. and share it here.
Yes.
And write your own project. But you have to be open mind first.
To receive everything.
To receive. Don't stay alone. Mm. You have to listen to your teachers. You have to... It's not only listen. You have to be proactive and ready to change. And you don't have to suffer... Kind of your self-esteem has to be always
improving,
improving,
and growing,
growing. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing for me was live here because you're here. Mm-hmm. Don't live with your memories and just only for them and with them, because in that case you will suffer. Mm. So take advantage of being here, and then you can join your present
and move forward with your future.
And you
do that.
Move forward.
Ah,
okay.
That resonates. That's deep. I'll take that. I hope we all do.
Yeah.
And so as a newcomer to Canada, what are some challenges you faced when you got here?
Okay. For example, spicy food. I now enjoy it. So it's part of my adaptation. Is mm. that called here? Mm. But the most difficult that I'm still struggling with that is the English, mm-hmm. English pronunciation. But then, who has the suitable English pronunciation here? Mm-hmm. Some people, like you, few people, but most of us are newcomers, right?
Of course.
When I ask myself, who is a Canadian person? By the way, okay, people that also came from other countries. Right? Mm-hmm. So everybody's welcome, mm-hmm. but do your best and study and take advantage of teachers to improve every single day. My English nowadays is not the same when I just came. Mm-hmm. So, and at my age, I've been able to survive. What about with young people? Sometimes yeah. we're lazy. We don't want to study. We don't want to, we feel comfortable just only talking to our society around mm-hmm. from our background
yeah.
With our language. No, yeah, we need to face language. First of all, we need to understand the way some other people behave. We also have to learn about weather conditions. Mm. So,
like today.
Identify layers. What does it mean? Layers, yeah. So we need to learn the way, be open mind. For example, in my case, I was a trainer. I used to teach how to teach.
Oh, okay.
But now I realized that, okay, you have to understand what is a blended learning process. Mm. You need to take advantage of virtual environments. You need to update everything you have. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to say this is wrong, this is right. No, you have to pay attention where you are mm-hmm. and adjust. Be able to adjust to the new situation mm. and enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So being
enjoy
versatile.
New music, enjoy new customs, and enjoy new places mm. and go out. When you go out, you have a new museum, in addition to the one you used to go years ago.
You discover new things.
You discover new things. Lovely cafes. Mm-hmm. Different kinds of music. Mm-hmm. Mm, go and visit new places. Understand some other cultures. Yeah, this is a really multicultural city. So
I guess I have one more question. So you touch on discovering new things and sort of adding to your life as you sort of come into Canada and navigate layers and what it means to adapt and all that. So does that principle of adaptation sort of guide how you teach your classes within the TD Center of Learning?
Of course, because my students come from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So now I can understand the way I can treat them.
Okay, yeah.
And all of them have felt that is the sense, the essential part is not learning Spanish. Mm-hmm. And they thought they were going to learn how to speak Spanish. But then they have said they have become more respectful. They have enjoyed traditional music. Mm-hmm. They have learned about some other instruments. Mm-hmm. They have learned how to dance. They have established, they have established new connections with all kind of people, mm-hmm. with different interests. Not only around this community, and that is, I found it amazing. People are coming from far away, mm-hmm. to our workshops. So they found that Spanish is romantic. They liked singing, but it's not singing because we're singers. Mm. It's because they let us feel comfortable and happier. And we have a lot of sadness sometimes inside.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a way we can...
To release it.
Yeah, to release even our problems. Mm. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
And if we're happy, so we can also share our happiness too. Mm-hmm. So when I said my coordinator and my friend Karen, these classes are amazing. Now I feel like, wow. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I have a combination of feelings coming to these classes. Mm. I have to prepare my mind, my body, a great material, videos. But especially I have to be prepared to talk to professional people and people from the streets at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
How can they be, connected? One to the other one. Mm-hmm. So I have to be really charged of energy, mm-hmm. because they are coming to be recharged, reload. Mm.
That's a good way to look at things. Very good.
I'm like this now because I just found one of my students. Mm. And she was amazing. She told me those kind of things. And she lives around the streets.
Oh.
And she said, you know, Maria, I didn't know I was going to be able to stay in the same class with that important teacher, mm-hmm. one from Canada. And I could talk to her and dance with her.
Aww.
I said, oh, yeah, that is the most important. That's why I'm a little bit emotional today.
Mm. And it just brings everything full circle, why you do what you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
The other one, I can remember different things around my class.
Okay.
I feel so happy. This is the the kind of emotion that I have with thinking about all situations we lived.
Mm.
Yeah. And after having that kind of class, that it was a formal class, we had some time to share, all of us. Mm-hmm. So it was great to let them, some of them used to cook for their friends, for partners, and they had a kind of time to release, as we said before, release all those kind of things that were deep inside. So it was a kind of therapy, you know?
Yes.
It's not. That's why it was a different class. Wow. It was more than class. It was a meeting with feelings, with a purpose. It was well organized. Mm-hmm. But the product was amazing.
Okay. Yeah. So, as you guys can hear, there are a lot of feelings in the room right now.
It's beautiful.
So, yes, that was beautiful. Is there anything you guys would like to wrap up with, Genevieve, Maria? Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Being around Maria is just a glimpse of the magic that I get to deal with on a daily basis in Regent Park. And I'm going to start crying if I look at Maria. So I just want to say that, you know, this is what's so powerful of being a part of this community and seeing the transformation for people and how deep it goes that sometimes you don't even realize. So that's what I'd like to add. So thank you so much, Maria.
We didn't finish our meetings like this. We were always like happy. So we were singing. We liked also to dance and learn from our culture. And the hopeness, it was always to have the next meeting. To experience
So are you going to have another meeting soon?
Yes, next year.
Next year, okay.
Yeah. All right.
So next year, you know. You can join us.
Next year.
So there will be more info on that. So thank you guys again for stopping by, Genevieve, Maria. And if you guys would like to get involved with the TD Center of Learning, all of the programs are on their website, and the programs are free.
Yes.
No charge at all.
No charge.
Really important.
So next up, we have our co-host Judy on our panel to commemorate the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. So stay tuned after this musical break.
There was a girl I used to know. She was oh so beautiful. She's not here anymore. She had a college degree, smart as anyone could be, had so much to live for. But she fell in love with the wrong kind of man. He abused her love and treated her so bad. There was not enough education in her world that could save life from this, the two girls. Well, how come? Give a cry for help. She even blamed things on herself, but no one came to her aid. Nothing was wrong, far as we could tell. That's what we like to tell ourselves, but no, it wasn't that way. So she fell in love with the wrong kind of man. She paid with her life for loving that man. So we cannot ignore, we must look for the signs, and maybe next time we might save somebody. Won't have a second try.
Okay, so welcome back to Catch La Fava Youth Radio here on Radio Regent. We are a youth-led radio show that explores issues of social justice, health, and wellness. And right now, we explore health, our health talk radio. I'm your host today, Erica. And tomorrow, December the 6th, marks a significant day in Canadian history for us. The National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women, marked every year on December the 6th, provides an opportunity to reflect on how violence affects women in Canada and how our communities can take action to end violence against women. Established in 1991 by the Parliament of Canada, this day commemorates the anniversary of the 1989 gender-based murders of 14 young women at L'École Polytechnique de Montréal. So we will now take a moment to play a clip of each woman's name that was murdered to commemorate their lives.
So we're here to remember 14 women that were killed on December 6th in 1989 at L'École Polytechnique, Montreal. So let us all remember Geneviève Bergeron. Hélène Colgan. Nathalie Coteau. Barbara Daigneault. Anne-Marie Edouard. Maud Aviernik. Maris Lagagnère. Maris Leclerc. Anne-Marie Lemay. Sonia Pelletier. Michel Richard. Annie Saint-Arnaud. Annie Turcotte. Barbara Kluznik-Widajewicz.
So in Canada and around the world, violence against women and girls remains a serious challenge. It impedes a woman's full and equal participation in public life. It causes short and long-term damage to women's mental health and physical health, and it hurts families and society as a whole. In fact, I have an eerie tie to all of this, and I just interviewed a very different Genevieve, who we heard also works to empower immigrant women. So this day of action against women on December 6, 1989 ties to me because on that day, I was not born yet. My mother was pregnant. So around that time, my mom was an immigrant. She had come to the country a year before. And she was watching the aftermath of the actual shooting when it happened. When she was pregnant, seven months pregnant. And she was watching the aftermath of the shooting, the life shootings and everything, everything that happened, the aftermath, the panic, the yellow tape. And 4 days later, I was born. And I asked her and I said, why did you watch something like that when you were pregnant? She said, I had no control over it. And I couldn't look away from the television because I was pregnant with my only child. She didn't know that at the time, but I am an only child. I was pregnant with my baby, and some of these women had lost theirs, and I'd never seen anything like this before. So as an immigrant woman, it was new to me. So this event really affects me because it's something that is tied up in my actual coming into the world. So now we'd like to turn it over to our panelists today about their own experience on gender-based violence. So my first question to you guys is, what do you think causes violence against women?
I think it's the dominance of the male. So some males. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, some males are overconfident that just because they're males, mm-hmm. they have more power. They're more empowered towards women. Because mm-hmm. some women do actually are, they feel like they're vulnerable and they can't really defend themselves. So that's like the cue for a man that can easily dominate.
They can't fight. They can't fight back or yeah. really have any means.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about our other panelists? What do you think is the cause of violence against women?
Well, I think it's the perception too of how you see violence and how it gets incorporated in your life mm-hmm. through television, through the family home, through advertisements. Mm-hmm. I think somehow that can have an effect on a person's the psychology of their mind and how they read into that and incorporate it in their own way of finding out exactly what it means to them when they go through that route. What I'm trying to say is that it's like a brainwashing kind of situation, I feel. Mm-hmm. And it's one where you need to question what you see than be part of what you see. Yeah. So
definitely. Joel, any thoughts over there, buddy?
I'm sorry, I have no thoughts right now. I'm just listening. That's all I'm doing.
That's cool. You can vibe with it and then hop in. Mm-hmm. All right. So my next question is, what are the consequences of violence for women and surrounding communities?
The consequence?
Yeah. Consequences of violence for women and communities that surround them.
I think there's a miscommunication that would stand through that. I think there's a breakdown in society where sexes are divided mm-hmm. and the roles and the status of people in general have a kind of conflict between them in terms of how males view women and how women view males and the actions that showcase through how they show their relationship between the two of them in terms of how society is run, I feel. Like, for example, what I mean to say is that if there is a fight happening and there's so many people around it, there's always going to be a side that loses and a side that is in observation and wins.
50-50.
Yeah, 50-50. And there should be a control matter of where you know the difference between right and wrong in terms of how to break that fight, but some people are absorbed in the fight because there's this hostility growing, there's this curiosity growing, mm-hmm. but the voice of reason is to know how to break down that conflict so that both sides do have a level where they're even with each other.
Okay. Bev, Joel, you guys look a little quiet over there. Any thoughts?
Well, I'm sorry. Oh, it's okay.
Well, what I got to say is this. For males and females, the dominance, like for me, it goes back to like the Bible days, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When the male is always the head of the household, right? And the woman has to follow. But this is the year 2017, right? Equality for both male and women. But I find like it violence against women. I can't really comment on the subject, but I'm stuck. I'm sorry.
So I guess what I want to ask you is, just since we're talking about violence against women, what is your perspective on it as a male?
Well, my perspective on this is simply this: violence against women, it's wrong mm-hmm. because number one, you're having children with these women. point blank. Mm-hmm. You're showing these children, boy or girl, whatever, that hitting your mom is right mm-hmm. for young men growing up in this country, right? In my opinion, it's wrong. Women are supposed to be treated as equal to men as well, mm-hmm. you know, definitely. As of jobs, in the workplace, in the schools, all over the place, right? And when you beat down your girlfriend, your wife, your mom, whatever, you're showing that, oh, it's a sense of power.
You're not even respecting them.
Thank you. Exactly. It's like a disrespect. Mm-hmm. And you're showing the younger generation and saying, you know what, this is right to beat down the feminine woman. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you're making it look like it's okay to beat up your mom, your sister, or any female out there.
Yeah.
Okay. So is it our role to stop the violence? Some insist that it's sometimes a private or cultural matter. So is this true?
Yeah, well, some cultures are like that, but that shouldn't really be the case against women that are getting abused or
being neglected or taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I can understand what they mean by it being a quiet and cultural, because in some societies, women don't have a voice
mm-hmm.
where they're able to speak up against violence. And when you consider things like immigration with families and they immigrate to Canada, they treat it as a private situation at home. And it's hard to get out of that home to express what has happened to you and what change you want or what you deserve as a female. It has a lot to do with trying to gain that control and leadership for yourself. But that's not something that should be limited to just a woman. The man himself, too, in the home, should also change his ways in terms of how he expresses his role as a equal person in the family unit. So, but I think if there was a lot of films and advertising and people who can come to people's homes and express what it's like to change those sort of views that they grew up on, it could change the community in a huger way. So,
the prime example I totally agree with what you're saying, but all that time I was thinking about Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember Tina Turner,
Tina and Ike, yeah.
You know what I mean? She got beaten and abused by this man all the different times, but she had the strength enough to fight back. And say, you know, I'm a stronger woman for the experiences of this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm not condoning this, but she learned from her mistakes never to happen ever again, right? Mm-hmm. So the future can go out saying, you know what? I don't have to do this anymore. I'm free from his bondage, his control, from taking me down to a dark place in my life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's the message I got from Tina, from that movie. Ladies can chime in whatever if you want to.
No, I do like the film about how it expressed her life and how she became stronger in a huge way, being a voice to women everywhere that dealt with the kind of treatment she went through. So it was a touching movie. I cried a bit.
I haven't watched it yet. I should.
Tina Turner.
So violence against women happens in all cultures and religions and all ethnic and racial communities and in every age and income group. However, some women are especially at risk. Aboriginal women are 2.5 times more likely to be victims of violence than non-Aboriginal women. The rates of violent crime against women aged 15 to 24 years old are 42% higher than rates of women aged 25 to 34, and nearly double the rates of women aged 35 to 44. And and often women living with physical or cognitive impairment experience violence 2 to 3 times more often than women without impairments. Additionally, women of color, immigration status, and those who identify as lesbian or bisexual experience violence as well. So in response to these stats, I just want to ask, why do you think these women are more at risk than others?
Miscommunication. And it really depends on the men, because like some of their mind, some men are like, let's just say homophobic, and they have like a lot against like lesbians. Mm-hmm. And so that gives them like the thought and the rights to abuse them, assault them, mm-hmm. and disrespect them and all.
I heard in Aboriginal communities, there's always a lot of also stereotypes in terms of alcoholism being one of them. But in some cases, that affects some Aboriginal communities as a major issue. So I feel that through years of abuse that has happened and slavery being an issue, it has passed down through those times to affect people in those communities in the worser ends, where they affect their family units too. So I feel like there's a chain in some way that that involves this.
I also think that for some of these women, these target brackets are very vulnerable. Like the young women, you said, mm-hmm. they haven't understood the dangers out there yet, so they're so much more open, so much more vulnerable in that way, being innocent. For Aboriginal women, I feel like because, like Joanna, you were saying that they have this negative stereotype going for them, they become targets, and they have this culture that's suffering so much and in such deep pain that they become vulnerable because they're still trying to struggle through their own kind of issues in their communities. And so these girls are so marginalized, and a lot of these girls, Aboriginal women, they tend to become sex workers. That's a very broad generalization, but in those cases, or they run away. And because of that, they're so vulnerable to abuse of men, and because they're in intimate settings with them, and because that keeps happening over and over again, it overwhelms task forces that are meant to protect these women, and it's easier for them to be like, oh well, another sex worker, whatever. So, and that's the same for the LGBT community. There's just so much violence that happens in that community that there's just not enough resources to protect them, and I think that's why these demographics tend to suffer the most.
But I think what I'm really getting out of it more, I'm identifying more with the LGBT community, only because not only are there not enough resources, I think, but it's more the resources they do go to, they're not sensitive in dealing with an LGBTQ person.
Right. That's true.
They're not. And then you have to think about, yes, they face violence from other people in society who are homophobic, but what about in their own relationship where both people are same sex? How do you deal with that?
I think it's because the narrative is so strongly dominant to heterosexual, mm-hmm. right? So that's why people understand the heterosexual experience more. And we have that understanding of the dynamic so much. But when it comes to same-sex relationships, there's just so little narrative understanding of their lived experience that definitely. We don't know how to respond to that. It's like, oh, well, like, you guys are having a quarrel again. Well, whatever, you guys will get over or something, you know? Like, yeah. It's the flamboyant gay couple or whatever. They're just having fun, right? And they could never fathom that there's actual real abuse or real violence going on. Like, they're so caricatured. Yep. In media and mainstream portrayals of them. So I think just so many bad stereotypes that go against them, that there, and there's not any clear truthful narrative. So I think that's why a lot of these groups like the LGBT get to suffer in this way.
Okay. So my next question is, what's the role of social media and new technologies in mobilizing people to end violence?
Need to be more educated.
Make the public more aware of what's going on.
To have a massive approach with sending information mm-hmm. to various communities cool. and people.
One of the things, actually, social media has caused caused violence against women in a different way, like cyberbullying and like revenge porn, where you like post like naked pictures of women and stuff. So that's a form of violence too. And so that's actually an interesting thing that we have to consider now in our new technologicalized world.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, I was going to say this. Why aren't the young people being more educated about this? Like, why aren't the high school kids having, like, seminars and being more educated about the violence against women, about the LGBTQ community? I hope I'm saying that right. Like, having teachers talk about this more with their students in the classroom so they can be more educated about the world around them now. You know what I mean? I find, like, they're living in a glass bubble right now, and it's horrible. Like, you should be more involved in your community. Educate them. Like, for example, what if a little child sees this, what's going on in his own household? How is he going to talk about this? Like, mm-hmm. he might feel uncomfortable. How is he going to go to a teacher with this? He can't. He's trapped in that little bubble. You know what I mean? He sees his mom and dad fight.
It's normalized.
You know what I mean? It's too normalized in society. And that's, I think, in my opinion, that's the problem.
And the kid can have, like, maybe some mental disorder.
Exactly.
And maybe something against with the women or the men.
Mm-hmm. Or be desensitized to watch situations like that.
Yeah.
No sympathy or empathy.
Mm-hmm. All I'm saying, teachers should get more involved. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. With the parents too, and talk about it. You know what I mean? But sometimes parents are way too proud about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't want to talk about with outside sources.
They're private.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, it's too private.
So Joel, you said that some people are, like, some families are too proud with it. But what about the families that sort of experience shame because, you know, they don't, on the outside, they're this happy family, but they don't want people to know that they're this dysfunctional family that does have the domestic violence?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, with that, they want to keep it more in the home, but, you know, you have to talk to someone who's been there and seen it for themselves. You know what I mean?
True.
Sometimes for example, doctors will tell you, to go to a psychiatrist. And sometimes psychiatrist doesn't even work.
Yeah.
Let's be real here.
Or therapy. Yeah.
Therapy does not even work. But sometimes, I don't know, like, have calm music, whatever. Talk to someone who's been in that same situation that you are in.
True.
But I guess there's a fear, too, of letting the whole community know about what's going on in your home because you don't want to be shunned or be looked at differently or be in an isolated situation where you can't look at people in there like the way you used to anymore. So.
Kind of like being judged, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, most definitely. So that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thank you so much to our panelists for sharing your opinions and for our listeners for tuning in. We would like to end on a positive note, pointing out that our generation of women, such as Genevieve, who we've heard, and who we've heard from, and me and myself, who has some connection to this significant day in Canadian history. Both of us are working toward social justice in our respective fields to empower women and empower individuals as a whole. So if we go by these signs, maybe we're on a better path to learning as a human collective the lessons of our past. If you are interested and you would like to learn how to end gender violence, TVO will be airing a documentary called A Better Man,
which explores two people unpacking the effects of abuse director Atiya Khan's boyfriend inflicted on her over 20 years ago. This will air tomorrow night at 9 p.m. and again at midnight. We will be back next week, same time, same place, Tuesday, 6 p.m. to 7. And right after our musical break, we will have Murphy Brown on Radio Region. So please stay tuned.